Satyam Tapi Kirtayamyanga Dhammatira Visham Katim Hari Swam Satkartum Gidamanya Bidasatim Tatapi Kirtayamyanga Yata mati yata shrutam Kirtim hari swam sat kartam Giramanya bidasitam. Anyone else? Okay. Tata, therefore, api, although it is so, Kirtayami, I do describe Anga Ovidura Yata as much as Mati intelligence Yata as much as Shrutam heard Kirtim glories Hare of the Lord Swam own Satkartam just purify Giram speeches Anyabhita otherwise Asatim Asatim unchaste. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In spite of my inability, whatever I have been able to hear from the spiritual master, and whatever I could assimilate, I am now describing in glorification of the Lord by pure speech. For otherwise, my power of speaking would remain unchaste. Please repeat. In spite of my inability, whatever I have been able to hear from the spiritual master, and whatever I could assimilate, I am now describing in glorification of the Lord by pure speech. For otherwise, my power of speaking would remain unchaste. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The purification of the conditioned soul necessitates purification of his consciousness. By presence of consciousness, the presence of the transcendental soul is verified. And as soon as consciousness leaves the material body is not active. Consciousness is perceived, therefore, by activities. The theory put forward by empiric philosophers that consciousness can remain in an inactive state is the proof of their poor fund of knowledge. One should not become unchaste by stopping activities of pure consciousness. If the activities of pure consciousness are stopped, certainly the conscious living force will be otherwise engaged. Because unless engaged, the consciousness has no standing. Consciousness cannot be silent even for a moment. When the body does not act, the consciousness acts in the form of dreams. Unconsciousness is artificial. By induced extraneous help, it remains for a limited period. But when the intoxication of the drug is finished, or when one is awake, the consciousness again acts earnestly. Maitreya's statement is that in order to avoid unchaste conscious activities, he was trying to describe the unlimited glories of the Lord, although he did not have the ability to describe them perfectly. His glorification of the Lord is not a product of research, but the result of hearing submissively from the authority of the spiritual master. It is also not possible to repeat all that one has heard from his spiritual master, but one can narrate as far as possible by one's honest endeavor. It does not matter whether the Lord's glories are fully explained or not. One must attempt to engage one's bodily, mental, and verbal activities in the transcendental glorification of the Lord. Otherwise, such activities will remain unchaste and impure. The existence of the conditioned soul can be purified only by the method of engaging mind and speech in the service of the Lord. The Tridandi Sannyasi of the Vaishnava school accepts three rods, representing the vow to engage in the service of the Lord with body, mind, and speech. Whereas the Ekadandi Sannyasi takes the vow to become one with the Supreme. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no distinction between him and his glories. The glories of the Lord as chanted by the Vaishnava Sannyasi are as substantial as the Lord himself. And thus, while glorifying the Lord, the devotee becomes one with him in transcendental interest. Although he remains eternally a transcendental servitor, this simultaneously one and different position of the devotee makes him eternally purified, and thus his life becomes a complete success. So, Om Gyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Salakaya. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Vanchakopa Tubhishtha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So the verse again. In spite of my inability, whatever I've been able to hear from the spiritual master, and whatever I could assimilate, I am now describing in glorification of the Lord by pure speech. For otherwise, my power of speaking would remain unchaste. So we're almost at the end of the chapter here. And this is a nice summary given by Gauranga Darshan Prabhu in his Bhagavata Subodhini. It's a summary of the third canto. So you can see here now, from 35 to 40, it's describing here where you can see Maitreya Muni feels himself unworthy to describe the Lord's unlimited glories. And so in this verse today, which is 36, he said, in spite of his inability, he's still trying to glorify the Lord, Hari. And then it will talk about to the rest of the chapter. That's the highest perfection. And then it describes here that he can't even be understood by the devatas, you know, or anybody else. So still, we should try to glorify the Lord. So there's a couple of verses that come to mind here, which brings to this point. This is that verse. Atashri Krishna Namadi Nambaved Krayam Indriya Sevan Mokihi Jivadu Swayameva Spurari Ada. So no one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of Sri Krishna through his materially contaminated senses. Only when one becomes spiritually saturated by transcendental service to the Lord are the transcendental name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Lord revealed to him. So this is the science that's given into the Bhagavad Gita. It's a science of Krishna conscious. So we can't become Krishna conscious simply by mundane scholarship. But you have to associate with a person who is in pure consciousness. So this is what's described here. So we have to understand it's not by mental speculation. So the next verse. which is important. Tanarapi su nichena tarodapi sahishana amanina amanadena kirtaniya sadahari. So one who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, but is always prepared to give all respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy name of the Lord. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a similar verse, which everybody knows, Satatam Kirtano Mam, right? Yatatas Cha Drita Vrata. So it describes that always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. And Prabhupada talks about that, how a Mahatma can't be manufactured by rubber stamping, just an ordinary man. But his symptoms are described here, that he is always engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord. So this is how he becomes attached to Krishna and his devotional service. So Prabhupada mentions there also that not only that this devotional service is easy, but it can be performed in a happy mood. One doesn't have to undergo any severe penances and austerity. He can live this life in devotional service, guided by an expert spiritual master, and in any position, either as a householder, a sannyasi, or a brahmachari, in any position and anywhere in the world, he can perform this devotional service to the Supreme Personality guided, and then he'll be considered a Mahatma, a great soul. So we talked about chattis, unchaste, asatim, and Srila Prabhupada is an example of chastity. There's a conversation of Srila Prabhupada with a Dr. Benford. And so in their conversation, he comes to the realization, he says, then you are not perfect, he's telling Prabhupada. And Prabhupada says, no, I am not perfect. None of us claims to be perfect. We have so many faults. But because we don't speak anything beyond Krishna's teachings, our teaching is therefore perfect. So he uses the example of a postman. He may be very poor, but he could deliver $1,000 or any amount of money to someone. You know, himself, it doesn't matter who he is, but he's just a delivery man. So Prabhupada mentions this. Again, he keeps on saying here, he may not be a very rich man, but his dealings as a postman are perfect, because although he is not rich, he can give you thousands of dollars. Similarly, our quality is that we are not perfect. We are full of imperfections, but we don't go beyond the teachings of Krishna. That is our process. Like the same example we've given before, this small child is not a mathematician, but because he takes the teachings of a perfect mathematics teacher, 2 + 2 = 4, his presentation is also perfect. So that's so nice. So in the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about the qualities of a devotee, and one of them is that he is always silent. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport to that verse that he does not speak of anything but the topics about Krishna. Therefore, he is called silent. So silent does not mean that one should not speak. Silent means that one should not speak nonsense. One should speak only of essentials. And the most essential speech for the devotee is to speak for the sake of the Supreme Lord. So this is nicely described there. So it's not like if you can meticulously study, you know, you can become expert in the Vedic literatures. You know, but if you don't fix your mind on the Supreme Lord, then all that endeavor is considered to be a waste of time. They use the analogy of like, one works very hard to take care of a cow, but it doesn't give any milk. So that's the fruit of one's labor. If you study, all you get is simply the labor of itself. There won't be any tangible results. So there's a nice verse from the 11th canto, and the verse goes like this. My dear Uddhava, that man is certainly most miserable who takes care of a cow that gives no milk, an unchaste wife, a bodily totally dependent on others. Useless children are wealth not utilized for the right purpose. Similarly, one who studies Vedic knowledge, devoid of my glories, is also most miserable. So you see. So in the purport to that particular verse, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada quote Srila Jiva Goswami, and he comments that the spiritual vibration of the Vedas is meant to bring one to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Many processes for achieving the Supreme Truth are recommended in the Upanishads and other Vedic literatures, but because of their innumerable and seemingly contradictory explanations, commentaries, and injunctions, one cannot achieve the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality Godhead, merely by reading such literature. If, however, one understands Sri Krishna to be the ultimate cause of all causes and reads the Upanishads and other Vedic literature as glorification of the Supreme Lord, then one can actually fix himself on the lotus feet of Krishna. So that's so nicely described. And then in the next verse in the 11th canto, he continues and says here, my dear Uddhava, this is the chapter, the symptoms of the condition of liberated souls. So his enlightening him. I guess they call it the Uddhava Gita also. An intelligent person should never take to literatures that do not contain descriptions of my activities, which purify the whole universe. Indeed, I create, maintain, and annihilate the entire material manifestation. Among all my pastime incarnations, the most beloved are Krishna and Balaram. Any so-called knowledge that does not recognize these activities of mine is simply barren and is not acceptable to those who are actually intelligent. So here Prabhupada is saying, I'm not perfect. So here we see, if you look in the dictionary, the definition of consciousness, they say that it actually emerges from the operations of the brain. I mean, they say that it's awareness of the by the mind, you know, and of yourself, or you're aware of the world. But they don't give any complete definition. In other places, they say here that, you know, you have your own awareness, you know, that you're a conscious being, you know, that you have thoughts and beliefs, sensations. These are consciousness. But they still think it's coming from the brain. But if we look at the Vedic viewpoint, the conception of Atma is brought about as an explanation of consciousness. And that once we understand the Atma, it leads directly to further advances in the study and exploration of the self and consciousness. So this is from the book from the science. It's called The Consciousness, The Missing Link. So in there they talk about, it says here, in fact, according to the Sanatana Dharma, the natural senses of the Atma are indeed not limited to interpreting the physical states of the material brain. So we're getting a clue. See, the actual Atma has its own senses, but they're looking through the machine of the body. So it says there also, according to Sanatana Dharma, however, we can directly observe and understand both the Supreme Person and the Atmas by taking advantage of the natural sensory faculties of the Atma. Thus, Sanatana Dharma provides the basis for the true science of consciousness. So the science is dealing with the full potentialities of the Atma, and it goes way beyond the thinking of the body or this mechanistic thinking. And then it goes on to say here, the Atma can achieve a higher state of activity in which it participates directly in a relation of loving reciprocation with the Supreme Person, Krishna. Since both the Atma and Krishna are by nature sentient and personal, this relationship involves the full use of all the faculties of perception, thought, feeling, and action. In fact, the direct reciprocal exchange between the Atma and Krishna defines the ultimate function and meaning of conscious personality. So just see, we're coming from the real personal world, and we have a personal relationship with that Supreme Being. So this is what Sanatana Dharma is teaching us, this actual nature of the consciousness of the Atma and its level of conscious activities goes beyond the body. So in that same conversation with Dr. Benford, Srila Prabhupada, he's asking Srila Prabhupada, well, because he's telling about your scientific, materialistic scientific is practically useless. So he says, well, what is useful? And Prabhupada says, it is useful to know yourself, what you are. And then Dr. Benford says, well, why is knowledge of myself better than knowledge of a plant? So Prabhupada says, if you understand what you are, then you understand other things. And that's called atma-tattva, atma-gyan, self-knowledge. That is important. I am a spirit soul, and I'm passing through so many species of life, but what is my position? So he goes on and says, we find out that we're unhappy. And he says, I don't want death, but death comes. I don't want disease, but disease comes. I don't want to become an old man, but it comes anyway. What is the reason of these things are coming by force, despite my desires to the contrary? If I am forced, what is that force? And why am I under this force? Who is enforcing these things? These things I do not know, but these are the real problems. I don't want excessive heat, but there is excessive heat. I have to take shelter of electric technology, a refrigerator, a cooler. Why? Who is enforcing these things? Why are they being enforced? I don't want this heat. Why? What have I done? These are real questions, not just study of foliage and writing volumes of books. That is a waste of energy. Study yourself. You don't want suffering, but why is it forced upon you? Who is enforcing? Why am I forced? These things you do not know. So Prabhupada just getting right to the point there. So this is the natural senses of the Atma. They're not limited just to interpreting the physical states of the material brain, but to go way beyond that. Understand who we are. We're not this body, this machine. And we have a relationship with the eternal spiritual being. So then here's an interesting point that Prabhupada says the whole movement of Krishna consciousness is to purify the consciousness. And then he says it doesn't matter what kind of brain one has. Because if he simply transfers his consciousness from matter to Krishna, his life becomes successful. So we know this pastime when Daksha gets the head of a goat because of his offense. So here Prabhupada mentions in the purport, this is in the fourth canto. It appears from the exchange of Daksha's head that the modern scientific theory that the brain substance is the cause of all intelligent work is not valid. The brain substance of Daksha and that of a goat are different, but Daksha still acted like himself, even though his head was replaced by that of a goat. The conclusion is that it is a particular consciousness of an individual soul which acts. So it's interesting. The brain substance is only an instrument which has nothing to do with real intelligence. The real intelligence, mind, and consciousness are part of the particular individual soul. It will be found in the verses ahead that after Daksha's head was replaced by the goat's head, he was as intelligent as he had previously been. So you see, he was intelligent. He was offering prayers to Lord Shiva and even to Vishnu. And then he actually started to perform the yajna again. So how can a goat do that, a yajna, and do these things? So therefore, Prabhupada concludes that the brain substance is not the center of intelligence. It is the consciousness of the particular soul. So he says the whole movement of Krishna consciousness is to purify the consciousness. It doesn't matter what kind of brain one has, because one simply has to transfer his consciousness from matter to Krishna, and then his life will be successful. So there's so many references about how without consciousness, that body is simply a lump of matter. So we have to get free from these designations of the body. It's not that Daksha thought, oh, I'm a goat now. But he was completely free. His consciousness was separate. He understood the whole reason for that. But yet we think, I'm an American. I'm a Hindu. I'm a Muslim. I'm a Christian. But we have to get freed from all these things. You see, so therefore we have to take advantage of the Krishna consciousness movement, and then our life is successful. So here, it doesn't matter what kind of brain you have. So his Srila Prabhupada's explaining here in a lecture in, this is in Los Angeles actually, in 1973. And this is talking about we have to always become in touch with Krishna. So he says our consciousness is not purified at the present moment, but if we purify it, and that purification also is possible by becoming in touch with Krishna always. And what is that touch? How do you touch Krishna? It's made possible by Srinvatam. That means hearing by oral reception. That's how we get in touch with Krishna. And then Prabhupada gives he's in a conversation with a Catholic cardinal. He's a secretary to the Pope, and this was in Rome in 1974. He says, one has to be educated, and he should be given a chance to hear about God. And then as soon as he becomes purified of his consciousness, he accepts and begins to love God. So the best place I found, which just gives a wonderful description of what consciousness is in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. And we don't have time to read that, but I would recommend that to read that. He starts off, the supreme conscious Ishvara is similar to the living entity in this way. Both the consciousness of the Lord and that of the living entity are transcendental. It is not that consciousness is generated by the association of matter. That is a mistaken idea. The theory that consciousness develops under certain circumstances of material combination is not accepted in the Bhagavad Gita. So he's saying how it's pervertedly reflected, just as light is reflected through different colored glass and things like that. So he talks about that. And then he talks about pure consciousness means that it's dovetailed in service to Krishna. So it just keeps going on and on. There's like three or four paragraphs. Prabhupada defines consciousness so nicely. And then just one section I'd like to read here. What is this consciousness? This consciousness is I am. Then what am I? In contaminated consciousness, I am means I am the Lord of all I survey. I am the enjoyer. The world revolves because every living entity thinks that he is the Lord and creator of the material world. So then he talks about the two psychic divisions of consciousness. He says material consciousness has these two psychic divisions. One is that I'm the creator and I'm the enjoyer. So there it is. So anyway, it goes on there. So we don't have really time to read all that. But so we could tell our consciousness is pure is that we don't differentiate between, you know, man, animal, these things like that. But in purified consciousness, we see that these are all spiritual living entities in these bodies. And it's like we're covered with dust. Actually, Chaitanya Charan gives a really nice analogy. He gives a whole class on how consciousness shrinks or expands. And it's very nice, and he uses a lot of stories from the Mahabharata and the Vedic literatures. But here I'm just going to use some points that I found in Prabhupada's books here. So our consciousness shrinks when we engage in sensual activities. Consciousness shrinks. And it expands when we get in touch with transcendence. And we talked about how to get in touch with that by hearing. So in a lecture in New York, Srila Prabhupada says, this is transcendental sound vibration, and this will help us to cleanse the dust on the mirror of the mind. In the mind, we have accumulated material dust. So just like you see LA, you open your window and don't close it for like a half a day or even a day. It's like there's all kinds of black dust on this window pane. Or to speak of like your car outside is like, you have to wash it so often, it gets so dirty. So this is just by our material activities, we get dirty. So our material activities probably explains these materialistic activities, thinking I'm the enjoyer. You see, I'm the controller. So as we know that verse, as fire is covered by smoke, mirror is covered by dust, embryo is covered by the womb, the devotee is considered similarly covered by different degrees of lust. So this is how we shrink our consciousness by these sensual activities. So the mirror refers to the cleansing process of the mirror of the mind, so many methods. So that's how we chant the holy names, things like that. So Prabhupada explains there, that's the best process. So the embryo is covered by the womb is an analogy to illustrate the helpless position for the child in the womb that he cannot even move. So that stage is compared to that of the trees, you see, but they've been put in this condition. See, their consciousness has shrunk. And see, they're put in such a condition because their exhibition of lust was great. So they're almost devoid of all consciousness. And then the mirror is compared to be like the animals, like the birds, the beasts. And the smoke-covered fire is compared to the human being. And in the form of the human being, you could revive that consciousness. You see, you could kindle it, and then you could make a flame, and that blazing flame can awaken us. So burn that lust. So that's how we do it. So we get free from that. So that's bhakti, engaging all our senses in Krishna service. So that's how we become purified. An example of consciousness expanding is that story we hear Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar Devotion. He quotes a story in the Skanda Purana, how that hunter was converted to a great devotee under the instructions of Narada Muni. So you can see when you're in this perverted, shrinked consciousness, you see other sentient, conscious beings as objects. You don't see them as person. So they're just objects for his own satisfaction or just objects to satisfy my senses. So Narada Muni, you know, even though he was addicted to killing by his association, he wouldn't even step on an ant. So this is the purification of consciousness. And this is by Sadhu Sangha. Prabhupada mentions that this consciousness can only be awakened by mercy. And we get the mercy by the association of the devotees. So, and then here's an interesting thing, the material covering. So in the Krishna book, it describes this story, how it was asked, how can a person who are within this clouded portion called the material world conceive of the absolute truth by the speculative method? So Parikshit answers this question, by Sukadeva Goswami. And he says, the Supreme Personality of God has created the mind, senses, and living force of the living entity for the purpose of sense gratification and transmigration from one kind of body to another. So this is the choice we have. So this material world is created so that we can enjoy our senses, so that we can, go from birth to death. Or we can use it to purify our consciousness and go back home, back to Godhead. Another analogy is that it's described probably describes that. To somebody, winter season is very nice, and to somebody, summer season is very nice. But he said, actually, there's neither distress nor happiness. This is all due. You know, the summer and winter, there's no distress, actually. But it's only due to contact with the skin. So this is what we're experiencing here. So we have to become in touch with Krishna. And if we do, then he says, you will be without the touch of this so-called distress and happiness. So this is what Krishna consciousness, it gradually does that. Another analogy is just like when it's raining, it says that the water is pure, but as soon as it comes in touch with the cloud of the earth, it becomes salty. It becomes contaminated. It becomes impure. So all we're trying to do is purify the consciousness. That's all. And then when we come into our pure consciousness, we're completely happy. So this is the last slide here. You know, how we get free from this entanglement of the fruitive activities. And there's that verse from the third canto. Those who are intelligent and are of purified consciousness are completely satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Freed from the modes of material nature, they do not act for sense gratification. Rather, since they are situated in their own occupational duties, they act as one is expected to act. So this is what we're doing. We put ourselves in the position of an eternal servitorship to the Supreme Lord, and we work for him, and then we actually become satisfied. So this is our identity. So in today's purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that while glorifying the Lord, we become one with him in transcendental interest, but we remain an eternal transcendental servant. So we're simultaneously one and different from the Lord. So that's nicely described there. So this is what we discussed, this asatam, which means the unchaste, you know, and talked about the unpure consciousness, and going to satam, which is truthfulness, the truthful devotee. And actually satam means truthful, or satam also means devotee. So this is what a devotee is. We go from asatam to satam. So that's consciousness, pure consciousness from the shrunk down consciousness to the expanded consciousness, expanding out of this material machine and entering into the spiritual world and associate with sentient beings and especially the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I'd like to end there. Thank you for your kind attention. Jai. Any comments, questions? Realizations? If anyone would like to spend a little more time. Yes, Prabhu. We should do what? Yeah. So the question is, if the brain is not important, why does Prabhupada say that we have to get some brain substance? Prabhupada says your brain is filthy like cow dung. And he says you get brain substance by drinking milk. So we're putting ourselves in the mode of goodness. So we deliberately put ourselves in the mode of goodness to expand our consciousness by eating foods in the mode of goodness, like milk. And we engage in pure activities to put us in the mode of goodness so that we can expand our consciousness. So it's not only the brain, but also the senses, all the activities engaged. So does that help? Okay, thank you. All right, thank you again for your kind attention. All goes to Srimad Bhagavatam. All goes to Srila Prabhupada.